is brought to you by new U.S. Royal Tires, engineered to keep your spare in the trunk. Lavoris Mouthwash for a sparkling clean mouth and breath. Twilight Zone is brought to you by Studebaker Corporation and your Studebaker dealer. Light racing, clean tasting Pepsi-Cola. And crispy, crunchy Franklin Dry Toasted Peanuts. Twilight Zone, brought to you by Pretty Perm, the new color conditioning permanent wave. New Micron Oral Antiseptic from Johnson & Johnson. Twilight Zone has been brought to you by Johnson's Baby Powder and other fine baby products. Metrical, wafers, liquids, and now new soups. And Chesterfield King tastes great because the tobaccos are. Twilight Zone, brought to you by 612 Insect Repellent, keeps bugs from biting. Johnson & Johnson, makers of Band-Aid shear strips. And new U.S. Royal Tires, engineered to keep your spare in the trunk.
There is a fifth dimension beyond that which is known to man. It is a dimension as vast as space and as timeless as infinity. It is the middle ground between light and shadow, between science and superstition, and it lies between the pit of man's fears and the summit of his knowledge. This is the dimension of imagination. It is an area which we call the Twilight Zone.
Following World War I flying mission, Decca experiences a fit of cowardice and deserts his best friend, who is surrounded by enemy planes. In his panic, he flies through a strange white cloud and lands at a modern-day American air base in France. He is immediately taken into custody by a major and led into the office of the base's commanding general. At first, both officers doubt Decker's authenticity, but slowly, the major comes to believe his story. In turn, Decker discovers that the man he left to die survived, went on to become a hero in World War II, and is due to inspect the base that very day. Realizing that his trip in time has been for a purpose, to give him a second chance, Decker overpowers the major, escapes to his plane, and takes off, disappearing into the same white cloud. Later that day, Decker's former friend, now a flight marshal in the RAF, arrives at the base. From him, we learn that Decker did return to save him at the cost of his own life. The story of The Last Flight is taken from The Twilight Zone Companion, written by Mark Scott Sucre, the third edition. The first non-Serling script to go into production was Richard Matheson's The Last Flight. While the episode is thoroughly as effective as anything Serling wrote for the series, it is totally different. Matheson had none of Serling's sentimentality or nostalgia, and none of his affection for the little people, those insignificant, slightly eccentric characters, so in evidence in many of Serling's scripts. Rather, his strength lay in the power of his plotting, the inexplorable way in which the stories unfold. This is particularly evident in such episodes as The Invaders and Nightmare at 20,000 Feet, The Gremlin on the Wing. But it holds true for The Last Flight as well. We watch not because of any particular warmth we feel for the characters, but because the story is so interesting. This strength is plotting not only helped Matheson sell the concept of The Last Flight to the viewers, but to Serling and Houghton as well. Normally, the procedure for a first-time contributor to the show would have been to write an outline before going to script, but in this case, Matheson just told them the idea. That was one of those cases, he explains, where the idea is so vivid, a World War I pilot lands and he's on a modern airbase. It gives you a vision so immediately that they responded to it. The Last Flight was filmed on location at Norton Air Base in San Bernardino, California. Director William Claxton sent actors Kenneth Hugh, Simon Scott, Alexander Scarby, and Robert Warwick through the motions with as little trickery and embroidery as possible, with the results that the drama of the piece emerges out of its utter straightforwardness. The vintage of the 1918 Newport biplane used in the episode was both owned and flown by Frank Gifford Tellman, a veteran motion picture pilot. As for the plane, it is too had been previously before the cameras in such films as The Dawn Patrol, Lafayette, Men with Wings, and The Last Squadron. As a matter of fact, Tellman remarked in 1959, this particular airplane has appeared in more World War I motion pictures than any other plane. When Tellman landed the biplane at Norton Air Force Base, he discovered that the allure resulting from the juxtaposition of two time frames extended beyond Matheson's teleplay. Director of photography George Clemens recalls, "When he landed at this airport and taxied up, you'd never seen people come around a thing, like kids around a new toy, as these modern-day jet pilots. They looked in the cockpit and felt the wings. They'd never seen anything like that. This attention was so enthusiastic, the plane had to be roped off and special guards posted to protect it from damage. It is a mark of both the quality of the writing and the respect in which the written word was held on the Twilight Zone that Matheson's script was filmed almost exactly as written. The only thing was one of the title, from Flight to The Last Flight. I had double meanings in many of my titles, says Matheson. And I wanted it to refer not only to the flight of the airplane, but to the person himself, the flight from the situation he was in. I suppose it still had a similar meaning. It was the last time he ran away as a coward." You know, I must admit, this wasn't one of my favorite episodes of The Twilight Zone. Honestly, for years, it had been one of the episodes that just slipped through the cracks. Not necessarily an episode that I just didn't like, but one that just, well, was forgettable. And to be fair, most of the episodes that have anything to do with boats or planes, they just don't draw my interest. Whether it's Judgment Night in Season 1, The 30 Fathom Grave in Season 4, and Passage on the Lady Anne, Season 4. But there are expectations to that unspoken rule, like Nightmare at 20,000 Feet in Season 5, a classic, and The Odyssey of Flight 33 in Season 2, also a classic. But of late, I've watched this episode on several occasions, and I must admit there's something about it now that I quite like. If nothing else, now if this isn't your cup of tea of an episode, it's very engaging and indeed is an interesting story that's quite compelling. Taking another crack at the episode, I found the actors to be perfectly cast and very believable. But with tonight's episode, we hit the halfway point in the first season, with exactly 18 episodes left to go. And out of those 18 episodes, we have 12 that I would consider some of the best of the show. Classics, if you will. And as for the rest, well, they fall into the middle tier of the Twilight Zone. But we'll talk about those more in depth when we get to them. Tonight's episode is entitled The Last Flight, which premiered February 5th, 1960. And well, I'll just let Mr. Serling introduce to you the story at hand.
Witness Flight Lieutenant William Terrence Decker, Royal Flying Corps, returning from a patrol somewhere over France. The year is 1917. The problem is that the lieutenant is hopelessly lost. Lieutenant Decker will soon discover that a man can be lost not only in terms of maps and miles, but also in time. And time in this case can be measured in eternities.
What's today's date?
March the 5th.
What year?
Why, 1917.
1917?
Yes, that's correct. Isn't it?
It's March the 5th, 1959, Lieutenant. Seriously expect us to believe that...
But it's true. It's true. When I took off this morning, it was 1917. Same sort of thing happened. happened to Guimard?
The French fighter pilot?
He disappeared one day while flying. At the memorial service, the Cardinal said, he belonged to the sky, and the sky has taken him.
Who the devil do you think you're fooling, Decker, or whatever your name is?
Sir, I swear to you, when I took off this morning, it was March the 5th, 1917. Mac and I were going on a unit. Mac, Captain Mackay.
Mackay?
Yes, we're in the
south. Alexander Mackay?
How did you know?
What have you got to do with
it? How did you know?
I suppose you're going to tell us you don't know that Alexander Mackay, Air Vice Marshal Alexander Mackay, is at this moment en route to this base for a tour of inspection.
But that's impossible.
Why is it impossible, Lieutenant Decker?
Because he's dead.
Could be checked on, sir.
If we wanted to waste the time, yes.
If it's a hoax, it's certainly an elaborate one.
If it's a hoax, Major.
I mean, sir, it's hard to believe that anyone would go to such incredible lengths just to play a joke.
Who said it was a joke?
All right, sir, what is it?
We'll find out when Mackay arrives.
Could ask the Minister of War in London. There might be records on this, Decker.
I think you believe him.
No, sir. Just that I can't help feeling there's something more to this than just a hoax.
Exactly.
You don't think he meant to use that on Mackay?
We'll know soon enough.
But sir, I'd swear the man was genuinely shocked when he heard Mackay was coming here. If he'd meant to do the man any harm, he'd have worn his gun. He wouldn't have left it in this plane.
Major, if you'll excuse me, I have a lot of work to do.
But, General, this whole idea doesn't make any sense.
Major, if you'll excuse me.
Yes, sir.
So instead of going through the last flight beat by beat and just going through the story and pointing out all the main plot points, I'll just point out some things about the episode that I really enjoyed and really deeply connected with. So, the Major and General's slow acceptance of Decker's story is absolutely wonderful and intriguing to watch and unfold on the screen. And just their slow acceptance of everything that is going on and them just getting these little pieces throughout the story until the very end, just the slow unfolding of all this information. It was, like I said, very intriguing, and it was wonderful to watch and just to see their disbelief, you know, come to the point of belief. And it's like, well, you know, this is really something that we have no idea as to what's going on, but we're drawn into it, and it's like the facts are undeniable. What we're getting, whether it's those pieces that are left behind by Decker, to just the general not being on board fully, but just at the very end, just seeing these things, like I said, they're just undeniable. And it's really, like I said, the acting in this episode was great. And it's just wonderful to see them put this to action. Just to see what they're actually experiencing. And just to see it not necessarily in their actions and in word, but just on their faces. Just plastered all over their faces. Now, the slow unraveling of the story of Deckard, just, you know, it doesn't rush to give you everything that you want. It just feeds you just a little bit at a time, and this all plays, you know, much into Matheson's story, his initial short story of this. And like I said, you know, none of this was changed except for the name, and it was just like one word in the name, and just to see all of it completely be put on screen, and for us to be able to watch this, and for Matheson's story to be completely adapted the way he wrote it, was just you know, to him, it was just one of those things that just doesn't happen. Even till this day, it just doesn't happen very often. Now, then there's the descent of Decker, and he, you know, his whole time traveling through a cloud to help a friend that he briefly abandoned, which changes the fate of his friend. And that whole scene and just that whole sequence, it was well written and executed. And, you know, this story, it isn't really as complex as a lot of other stories we've seen in the Twilight Zone, and there wasn't a whole bunch of trivia behind it, but there was a lot said within this simple story, you know. And like Matheson said, there was two different things he was going for with this. It was not only the actual flight, but it was the flight of Decker from cowardice. It really spoke to that well, I think. And then the very thing that makes Decker seemingly a flawed character, you know, a coward, is the thing that makes him a hero within this short story, you know, and that plays true to true life, you know, real life itself. You know, it really played that up very well. You know, life is not always black and white, and you know, life doesn't travel in straight lines. You know, it travels within the Twilight Zone for the most part, the fifth dimension, and we are getting and seeing a lot of this, because there are, you know, more than just one side to everyone. There's two sides. There may be a person that may be dealing with their demons, but they're handling said demons as well. And with Decker, he had this moment of cowardice, and he even was talking, when he was talking to the major in the room where he was being held, they were having this conversation, you know, everyone gets scared, and, you know, essentially it's like, you know, what do you do with that fright? And you have the, you know, intentions to run away, to take flight from that cowardice. And this story was so perfectly wrapped up and just almost in a neat bow. Now, Marshall McKay, you know, all but confirms Decker's story, which further galvanizes what Decker was saying to the general and the major. And this starts really the general, which wasn't on board up until really the very moment Decker escaped. And then they go back and they see a lot of the possessions that he had left behind. And the general is asking McKay, you know, do the soldiers usually leave things behind, or do they, you know, did the Germans actually take these things? And he was like, no. So this was really pointing them in the direction of, this is not something normal. This is supernatural, to the very least. But, you know, that whole that whole sequence with them going back and forth and figuring this out in their head, and you can just, I just love seeing this on screen. Just, you know, we have these characters that they are feeling one way, and then they're slowly but surely coming to another conclusion, and they're being slowly drawn out. And this was perfectly done, I think, within this episode. Now, the moment when the Major and the General come to the final conclusion that Decker was telling the truth is a great moment. It you know, he's retelling the story as this old war vet, and you know, I love hearing these types of stories, you know, being, you know, not having served in the military myself, but having family members that have served in the military. I just sometimes I just love hearing some of these stories, and it's just so appealing to me, and it's so interesting and fun, and you know, and you realize that there's this camaraderie between these soldiers when they're in the cockpits or wherever they may be, and it's you know, it's definitely a brotherhood. And we get that in just McKay's retelling of the story, and we are hearing a lot of it. We don't necessarily need to see it, which I think is a really great way of telling the story and displaying what Decker actually did, and why McKay is sitting there inspecting the base at that very moment. So this is back and forth, and this goes back to what Decker and the Major were talking about in the room when he was being held right before he gets the upper hand on the Major and escapes, and you know, about, you know, what do you do? And he knew, Decker obviously knew he was going to, or you know, at the very least, he knew that there was a chance that he would die going back, being surrounded by seven German airplanes at that time. And he just went back knowing that this was the cost that he possibly would pay. And you know him just having that that realization, knowing that something possibly would happen, I just loved his resolve to go back and to solve something that he created. And it's like, you know, one life for another, and you know, what does it really mean to be swallowed up by the cloud, which possibly could have been an element of the Twilight Zone. Now, the conclusion that that Decker was telling the truth, like I said, is, you know, it's just a great moment told by McKay. And the dialogue between Decker and the General is just quite compelling in what he's saying, how he's saying it, the emotion, and everything that's surrounding it, and going about, you know, the way he's telling the story. He's telling his truth, right? And I just loved that whole part of it. So my general thoughts on this episode, if I had to rate it out of, say, 4 stars, I would definitely give this episode 3.5, right? So, yeah, it really changed the looking at this from different perspectives, getting some of the backstory, where the story came from Matheson, and just everything surrounding that, it just really changed. And I'm really looking at all of these episodes far differently now than even, you know, 2 or 3 years ago. Just, they are just really interesting and compelling. So, yeah, so my general thoughts on the episode, you know, this was this wasn't the greatest episode, but it was a really, really good episode, really solid episode, and definitely one I would come back to over and over over again. Well, this has been Tony between Light, Shadow, Science, and Superstition, the podcast. I hope you guys enjoyed this episode, my first one back in quite a while, but I hope you guys enjoyed the episode and really getting back into the swing of things after a lot of changes in life in general. Well, I'll see you guys on the next episode Between Light, Shadow, Science, and Superstition.
It isn't a crime to be afraid, Decker. Every pilot's afraid at one time or another. I'm sure Mackay would understand that.
No.
Well, what makes you think he knows, anyway?
Because it was me that let the Germans trap him.
But I thought you said you were fighting three German planes yourself, so how...
I wasn't fighting anyone. I was running! When the Germans came at us, I left him up there to die.
Well, he didn't die!
Well, I can't understand that.
Well, maybe he got help somehow. What's the matter?
What you said. Got help.
Well, it's certainly in the realm of possibility.
You see? Maybe it was me that helped him.
Decker, I said when he got help, I meant that somebody else...
Well, there wasn't anyone within 50 miles who could have helped him. Maybe it wasn't an accident that I landed here. Maybe I was brought here for a purpose. To find out that Mac had survived. To find out that time was giving me a second chance. You've got to let me go.
But I can't.
But you've got to, don't you see? It's the only chance I have. It's the only chance he has.
But he's alive. He's coming here today.
How do you know that? How do you know that if I don't get back, he won't be here? How do you know that he won't have been killed 42 years ago unless I help him now?
That's insanity, Decker.
Twilight Zone was brought to you tonight by Kleenex Tissues.
The only tissue that gives you so much. The soft, strong tissue with the Kleenex touch.
The Twilight Zone is brought to you tonight by the perfect coffee on the modern scene. New Aroma Roast Sanka Coffee. Twilight Zone, brought to you by Pall Mall Famous Cigarettes. Over, under, around, and through, Pall Mall travels pleasure to you.
Dialogue from a play, Hamlet to Horatio. There are more things in heaven and earth than are dreamt of in your philosophy. Dialogue from a play written long before men took to the sky. There are more things in heaven and earth and in the sky that perhaps can be dreamt of. And somewhere in between heaven, the sky, the earth, lies the Twilight Zone.
And now, Mr. Serling.
Next week, we show you the face of war, but the kind of portrait we venture to say you've never seen before. Dick York and William Reynolds star in The Purple Testament, the story of a man who can forecast death. That's next week on The Twilight Zone, The Purple Testament. We hope you'll join us. Thank you and good night.